Welcome to the State of Sound podcast, produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, a companion series to the blockbuster exhibit, The State of Sound, a world of music from Illinois, now playing at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the State of Sound podcast. We are recording in the State of Sound studio at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. My name is Reggie Guyton. I'm in the studio with my producer, Randy Irwin. Our guest this episode is dedicated to the preservation of gospel music. He founded the Black Gospel blog in 2004, and in 2014 launched its successor, the Journal of Gospel Music. He is on the board of the Chicago Gospel Music Heritage Museum and the Rhythm of Gospel Awards. He is also a member of the Stellar Awards Gospel Music Academy, the Recording Academy, the National Independent Gospel Music Association, the Center of Black Music Research, and the Association of Recorded Sound Collections. His first book, A City Called Heaven, Chicago and the Birth of Gospel Music, was published in 2015. And he currently hosts the Gospel Memories radio show Saturdays on Chicago's WLVW 88.7. State of Sound is honored to have Bob Maravich joining us.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for joining us today. It's
happy to be here.
It's an honor to have you here. Also, we wanted to thank you for the artifacts that you've loaned the museum for the State of Sound exhibit. We really appreciate not only having representation as far as gospel, but also having some variety in the way that it's represented. Would you mind telling us about the artifacts that you donated?
Sure. Yes, they're from my private collection of gospel music materials. They represent Illinois. I provided a signed contract by Mahalia Jackson to perform at Town Hall in 1957. She, in her own inimitable way, never was one to be ripped off by a promoter. Mm-hmm. So whatever the price was that they said she was going to be paid, she increased it in pen and signed it. So I thought that was just quintessential Mahalia Jackson. Also, her first record on Decca, 1937, was recorded here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It did not do well, but it was, in fact, her first record. Also, some acetates from her singing on the movie St. Louis Blues that were never released commercially, but, of course, in the film. And then some other records, Soul Stirrers, 78 RPM discs that feature the great Sam Cooke when he was with the Stirrers before he became a pop singer. One acetate by the Staple Singers from when they were with VJ Records, an acetate that was released in 1961, basically was so that it was like an instantaneous disc that they could send to DJs to play on the radio. Mm. And then their first commercially released single on United. They had, Pop Staples had printed up some of his own copies of their first record to sell out of the boot of their car. This one was on United that you have at the museum. This is the first one that was available in stores, and it was a promo. Actually, the one you have is a disc jockey promo that also would have been sent to the DJs. And then finally, a Gospel Fest banner, the kind that hang from streetlights, advertising the June 2000 Chicago Gospel Music Festival. So a little bit of yesterday and today in that collection.
And we are so grateful for the variety, and there's so much to get into in regards to these artifacts. So first and foremost, I'm impressed with the Mahalia Jackson recording contract. Simply thinking about the social times and how hard it would have been for a woman, more specifically a Black woman, to have control over her own intellectual property and her business. And I appreciate that so much because it gives you an insight to her character and who she is as a person, and also how serious she was about her craft.
Oh, God, God, separate the wheat from the tare, didn't he say?
I think she paved the way for a lot of African-American women in music, period, by taking control. She demanded her proceeds in cash because she did not trust even a check. She very much, once she became famous, she controlled her assets, and nobody could mess with Mahalia Jackson.
So let's move a little bit past Mahalia Jackson and talk about the Soul Stirrers with Sam Cooke. And this is before Sam Cooke went commercial, like you said, but he co-wrote Touch the Hem of His Garment, and that's the record that we have featured.
I could just touch the hem of your garment, I know I'll be made whole right now.
He had been with a group called the Highway QCs, which, believe it or not, is still out there. Spencer Taylor is still leading it, and he's in his 90s. But
amazing.
Sam Cooke, Highway QCs was a local quartet. And Sam started to sort of stand out in that group for his, I want to say for lack of a better word, he had sex appeal. He was a young man, a talented, attractive young man. He sang gospel music. So this portrait of a clean-cut African-American man who sang Christian music, he was loved by the ladies, and he had a wonderful singing voice. So when R.H. Harris of the Soul Stirrers, who had been with the group since the 30s, wow, decided to retire, in which he didn't really retire, but he wanted to get off the road. They needed to replace him, but R.H. Harris was so much an iconic part of the Soul Stirrers. It's sort of like, how do you replace him? It's like, well, how do you replace Paul McCartney of the Beatles?
Right.
Same kind of thing. So Sam Cooke came to mind. And the Soul Stirrers were concerned at first, thinking, here's a 21-year-old guy replacing the venerable R.H. Harris. Are Soul Stirrers fans going to, revolt, thinking, how could you do this? This youngster who's untested and so forth. Mm. Well, it didn't take long for them to realize that, Sam had the voice, he had the talent to write songs, good gospel songs. And, of course, he had that same pop appeal that drew a younger crowd. So in a sort of a backhanded way, the Soul Stirrers probably extended their lifespan by replacing R.H. Harris with a young man who could bring in a whole new generation of churchgoers to gospel music. Hmm. And Touch the Hem of His Garment is one of those songs where Sam wrote it, and when you hear it, you hear that Sam Cooke that you recognize from when he became a pop star, like You Send Me and Twisting the Night Away. Mm. He has all those same ornamentations in his voice there that he did later.
Darling, you send me, honest you do, honest you do, honest you do.
Whoa. You know, I just listening to this conversation, I'm prompted with so many questions because I understand how some traditionalists would be weary of having some new blood in the genre, but also there's something to be said about continuing on that legacy. And to hear that the Highway QCs are still extended and this music is still living on, it says something to the power of extending and the power of connecting and marketing to not just one audience. So with that, I also wonder, what can a secular white audience take away from black gospel music?
Well, I can speak to that from experience. I'm a blue-eyed, blonde-haired, Polish-American from Northwest Indiana. Fell in love with black gospel music. So I think there's a couple of things. One is the message. It's a universal message. Certainly, if you're a Christian or any kind of a religious person, the message there is the same as it is in every church. But I think even if you're an atheist, and I know atheists who love gospel music, I know a Jewish atheist who loves gospel music, maybe one of the most ardent supporters of gospel music. There's just a message of hope and encouragement in it. There's a sense that that even though things may look bleak now, there is a better day tomorrow. Mm. That's sort of one message from the gospel music. But even in the worship message, just saying thank you for another day, mm-hmm. it's a prayer. Saying, I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for the Lord. I wouldn't, the things that I have that I might take for granted may not have been this way there, but for the grace of God go I. So there's messages in there that even if you're not a churchgoer, they're inspirational and can take you through. And so that's why I think the music, and then I think certainly on the musical side, because at least African-American gospel music has this sort of rich sound that influenced so much pop music. People hear that in gospel. They see that's the root. So the rhythms, the improvisation, the falsetto singing, the polyrhythms, The repetition, you even hear in pop music, the Pentecostal beat, you know, the accent on the backbeat, that all comes out of the church. And so I think people like myself were attracted to it because we came from hearing rock and roll and R&B and soul and realized, oh, that's the source of all of it. And so you sort of get, and it's sort of more of a demonstrative version of what we grew up listening to in, on the radio.
I love and appreciate this conversation and the acknowledgement of that being the root of so many different American genres. We could keep going forever, but I have a personal question, and I hope I'm not being too crass, but what drew you to this genre?
Well, it was a combination of things. First of all, I grew up listening to black music. I to this day, I cannot explain why, but when I was a kid, you know, I was listening to Booker T and the MGs. I was listening to Motown. I just liked black music. Now, growing up as a small young kid in a white community, I was called names for listening to that music. N Lover, so forth. It hurt my feelings, but it didn't stop me from listening to the music. I just liked it. But that was you know, R&B and soul and that. That side of black music. I didn't really hear gospel until, and I know the date because I had the foresight to record the broadcast that I heard. January 1984, I was in my dorm room at Notre Dame getting ready to do the music for our, I was the music minister for our chapel. We had 11 p.m. Sunday night mass, and I was the music minister for it. I was getting ready, so I was flipping the channels in the radio, and I came across a radio broadcast by the Cosmopolitan Church of Prayer in Chicago. And they were singing Every Time I Feel the Spirit. I was transfixed. You know, I threw a cassette in the radio combination, radio turntable, you know, did everything but wash your dishes kind of machine. And I recorded this broadcast. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the music. Oh, it, all of a sudden it made sense to me. It's like, this is where everything comes from. This is it. And so that was my first experience with gospel music. But later on, my now late wife, who taught at Providence St. Mel in Chicago, was an African-American high school. Now it's K-12. She was the music teacher and choir director. And so every concert that the students would give, they would always end with the latest gospel song that was on the radio, whatever the gospel choir hit of the day, Kirk Franklin, Olanda Draper, Ricky Dillard. And so I got reinvigorated with it there. And I just, at that point, decided I like this music so much, I really should learn something about it. And I never looked back.
How amazing is it to be able to look back at one moment and completely realize how it's changed your life? Let's take a moment to reset and hear from some people who are visiting the museum and the State of Sound exhibit, and we'll be right back at it.
Where are you guys from?
We're from Wisconsin, actually.
And what did you like best?
Probably the Rolling Stones song.
And I think it's really cool just getting to sample all the different genres of music and hearing all the different ones, I think, was really cool.
Where are you from?
I'm from Springfield, Illinois.
Oh, great.
So local.
But. Yeah. And what about the exhibit, the main thing that kind of hit you about exhibits?
One, I'm a guitar buff, so some of these guitars in here I actually think are amazing, like the Washburn with the bell shape and the Martin guitar with all the detailing. But I love the case over there with stuff from, like, records from Chicago and all the guitars from the band Styx. I think that's absolutely amazing.
And we're back. So the other side of this, and we talk about gospel being such an emotional genre. It has been instrumental in conveying hope. That's just the power of gospel and connecting to the soul. It's a little bit difficult to come to an understanding of what gospel is or what a religion or spirituality is. And music is kind of that bridge point. Music speaks in so many different languages and in places. So what can we learn from that? How can the music mend these tensions? what are the racial and musical tensions between Black gospel and white gospel groups and churches in Illinois?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is really a foundational question, and a lot of people are asking it that question. In fact, the Recording Academy had an entire a webinar on that earlier this year, talking about these issues. I think it was Martin Luther King said that Sunday is the most segregated day of the week because of the churches, and of course that the history of that goes well beyond what we're talking about. But today, it's interesting. It is not as black and white as it might seem. And the reason I say that is because you're now starting to see this kind of mix, particularly in mega churches, of trying to encourage a multicultural congregation with very multicultural music. So you're seeing, particularly in what's called the praise and worship style of, say, gospel, a reaching beyond the borders of traditional African-American gospel music to incorporate some of the Christian contemporary music, worship music into that, so that not only for, but also a very, very strong Latino Christian group, evangelicals in particular, mm-hmm. So you're hearing the sounds of contemporary Christian music, which is the sort of the name for the white gospel, and then you're hearing gospel music from the black tradition, and then you're hearing Latino Pentecostal music coming in, and there's sort of this blend. So on the gospel station, you might hear, in Chicago, it's probably going to be more of the traditional sound because we're a traditional city, but around the country, you're going to hear this mix. And so the tensions, I think, come about from my perspective, as to how much mix should there be without losing the fundamentals that made gospel gospel. Mm. There are certain Pearl Williams Jones, who's an ethnomusicologist, once said that gospel music probably retained more of its Africanisms than any other style of black music, and I think that's true.
I would agree.
So what happens when you try to be all things to all people and lose your foundation? And that is a concern. I mean, it's not, no one's been able to answer that question yet, but that is a concern, that how far can you go to embrace without losing your roots? I think there's also a tension between, there's the Dove Awards and they have the Christian Contemporary and Gospel Awards, and there's the Stellar Awards for the African American Gospel. So there's still this separation. There's a little bit of movement between to try to come to terms, but sadly, there's still not a really 100% understanding of how you keep how can you bring everybody together under one roof, and yet keep your own identity. And I think that's the biggest tension right now. Certainly traditional gospel fans are very skeptical of the praise and worship. They don't really like that. And then yet the younger generation that grew up on praise and worship they kind of feel that maybe the traditional sound is a little older, and maybe that's grandmother's music, and that's not out of interest to me. So I don't have an answer for you, unfortunately. It's an ongoing conversation.
and that's okay, because as long as we're continuing the conversation, I think we'll be able to get to a point where we at least begin to understand each other. What single album of black gospel music would you recommend to a novice?
Well, I would say for in Illinois, I would say, and I'm going to show my bias here and say, the Cosmopolitan Church of Prayer, Every Time I Feel the Spirit, from, I think that was 1980, 81.
Okay.
I'm a choir head, so I love choir music. Absolutely. I just think it gives you a sense, right? It's got the up-tempo and the slow and great singers, and so I think it's a great introduction to gospel music. As far as the single most important album in black gospel music history, again, I probably show my biases because I'm just finishing my book on it will be published in November, but Peace Be Still, James Cleveland and the Angelic Choir. you know, James Cleveland grew up in Chicago, so I guess there's an Illinois connection there. But 1963, 4 days after the Birmingham bombing, the Angelic Choir of Nutley, New Jersey, First Baptist Church in Nutley, and James Cleveland recorded Peace Be Still as a part of this in-service. It was the third volume of a live in-service experience for recording listeners. And I don't think the record company thought it was going to do much, but so it was released in late 1963. It spent a couple of years on the charts. Peace Be Still became one of the most iconic gospel songs in history. It was an old hymn turned into a gospel song. I think the total number of sales, nobody knows exactly, but it's somewhere between 600 and 800,000 copies of that album were sold. It still sells today. And so I think what makes that album, it says so much about African-American culture, church culture, and gospel music, in that it speaks to 1963 was just an awful time in American history. It speaks to that, but in a way that is subtle, not explicit. You really have to know what it's being said in that album to really get the message. It's not a protest album, but it is a protest album. And so I think someone to hear that, and of course it's very readily available today, would really learn a lot about the style of gospel music and what people were feeling back in those dark days, of our history.
That's a great summation. Thank you. Okay, so the last question, and then we've got to wrap it up for our listeners out there, but where is the best place to hear black gospel music in Illinois?
In church. in church, yeah. And in Chicago in particular, there are several churches that really, and they do welcome visitors. I suppose whenever visitors are welcome back into churches full time.
Sure.
I would suggest the First Church of Deliverance, 4315 South Wabash in Chicago. Their Sunday services are almost identical in structure with music and everything as they were back in 1935 when they first came on the air as a radio broadcast, one of the first and most famous radio broadcasts in gospel music and in church. It's a spiritual church on the south side of Chicago, so definitely First Church of Deliverance, Cosmopolitan Church of Prayer, which is just south of the University of Chicago. Greater Harvest Baptist Church on the south side on State Street is also a great place to listen to wonderful gospel music. And, of course, Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church under the leadership, of the late, great Reverend Dr. Clay Evans is another wonderful place to listen to traditional music. I would say when the Gospel Fest is back, definitely the Gospel Fest is a great place to listen to gospel music, mostly of today. The churches you'll find
for today.
I would have to say I do. Not a Chicagoan necessarily, but
okay.
I think Dominique Jones. She goes by Doe. She's a wonderful singer songwriter. She's sort of like the Alicia Keys of gospel.
Oh.
But I will say, in terms of Chicago, Brian Courtney Wilson, who grew up in Maywood, now lives in Texas. Wonderful singer, crooner. Gospel, very earnest. You hear the earnestness in their music.
The mountain has to move. The mountain must obey the words that I speak.
And I guess I also mentioned Donald Lawrence. He is a Chicagoan.
Donald
very.
Lawrence.
His background is a musical. You know Donald Lawrence?
Yes, of course. Of course. Foundation.
Yeah. He is somebody, he's got a musical theater background, and you hear it in his music, he's able to tell stories, so I think any of those would be among my favorites.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bob. This has been a wonderful interview, and for our listeners out there, we encourage you to come on by to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum and see the State of Sound exhibit. Thanks again, Bob, for joining us.
Thank you, Rachel. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This has been the State of Sound podcast produced by the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. To hear other episodes and more information about the exhibit, The State of Sound, A World of Music from Illinois, visit musicfromillinois.com.